The final case for argument this morning is Gary Mock, appellant, versus Department of Revenue and Regulation, Appalachia. For the appellant, we have Mr. Jeffrey Brackowitz from Sioux Falls, and for the Appalachia Department of Revenue, we have Mr. Jack McGee, attorney with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Brackowitz, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. Your honors, my name is Jeff Brackowitz. I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Gary Mock. During oral argument at the United States Supreme Court case of McCullough versus Maryland, Daniel Webster is quoted as stating, "An unlimited power to tax involves necessarily the power to destroy." And although McCullough versus Maryland was a very different case, decided at a very different time, and involved different legal issues, Daniel Webster's observation about the need for there to be limits on the taxing authority rings true today. We are not here, however, asking the court to recognize or impose new limits. We are simply asking the court to enforce and reaffirm the limits that have been set by statute and by this court's prior decisions. The issue here is really an issue of taxation. Mr. Mock is challenging an assessment for sales and use tax in the amount of $70,641.32. Mr. Mock has proven his entitlement to a full or partial exemption. A full exemption under SDCL 10-45-12.2, or at the very least a partial exemption under the former SDCL 10-45-12.3. We respectfully request that the Circuit Court and Department of Revenue's assessment be reversed and vacated in its entirety.
There was some discussion about the partial was never raised. There was never a request by your client or any kind of proof that it should only be partial.
Your Honor, I don't believe that the record reflects that that was an issue that was raised before the hearing examiner. And it was an issue that was preserved in all of our objections to the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law throughout every stage of this matter. We would respectfully submit, Your Honor, that that is an issue before the court today. We are seeking invalidation for essentially two reasons. First, that it's legally and factually flawed, the assessment. And second, which is closely related, but does present a different question, is that the assessment itself, the process used by the department, is representative of arbitrary and capricious decision making. As far as the exemption under SDCL 10-45-12.2, the parties do not dispute that Mr. Mock must prove two things. First, that his services fall under SIC Group 871. And second, that those services were rendered to BPI, for projects entirely outside of South Dakota. Now, the second element, as far as where the projects were located and where the services were rendered for, that issue is not in dispute, and that's an issue that has not been challenged on appeal. The narrow issue before this court, then, is do Mr. Mock's services fall under SIC Group number 871? And we believe that the evidence in the record firmly establishes that his services do qualify. If you look at, in the record in this case, the Department of Revenue's July 24, 2003 letter to Mr. Mock, the letter states that even though you provide engineering-type services, you don't qualify because you do not hold a state-issued license or certification. That was the sole and exclusive basis. So really, then the issue before the court becomes even more narrow. Does SIC Group number 871, does it require state licensure certification? And not just from any state. The way the department is construed, it requires South Dakota licensure or certification. We believe that the department's interpretation is inconsistent with the clear language of the SIC provision, is not supported by other language within the SIC manual as a whole and within Group 871 and simply doesn't make sense. If you look at one of the closely related groups, and the focus in this lawsuit has always been on code provision 8711, engineering services. But really, the exemption covers engineering, architectural, and surveying. 8712, which applies to architectural services, contains the same, if not similar, language. Establishments primarily engaged in providing professional architectural services. An example is house designers. If the department's construction of 8711, which deals with engineering services and the term professional, if that's a legally sound interpretation, it should apply across the board, meaning an architect who provides professional architectural services would also have to have the same type of licensure or certification. But under 8712, architectural, it lists house designers. Statutorily, house designers are one of the groups or classes that are not required to have any sort of state license or certification. And if you look at SDCL 36-18A-9, it lists certain persons exempt from provisions of this chapter. Under subpart 6, any person engaged in the preparation of plans and specifications for the erection, enlargement, or alteration of any of the following buildings, any dwelling for a single family, is provided as an example.
Was this requirement for a license, does the record indicate that this has been the consistent way of interpreting this, or was this new to your case?
We obviously were not in a position to provide evidence of how the department internally treats this, construes this, or approaches it, and no evidence was offered before the hearing examiner regarding the context or history of this particular provision.
And there's no rule or regulation that's been passed by the Department of Revenue that defines this further?
Not that we're aware of, Your Honor. The only provision that we're aware of relates more towards projects and the location of projects. And attached to that July 24, 2003 letter were various materials. And this can be found in our appendix at page 11. There are some excerpts from a question and answer taken from a newsletter discussing project locations. But as far as dealing specifically with is a state-issued license required, there is nothing that says that whatsoever.
But and you're saying that really is the only issue, and the services provided out of the state isn't an issue?
We don't believe it is an issue, Your Honor, as far as the project location, that being the second element. And that was an issue that we argued consistently throughout these proceedings. Now, really, at the initial stage before the hearing examiner, it was most certainly our burden to make that showing. We made that showing. The hearing examiner concluded that we made that showing. The department rejected pretty much all of the significant aspects of the hearing examiner's proposed findings and conclusions, at least as far as we're concerned.
What did the department find as to that issue?
The department simply didn't address it.
Okay.
And we actually submitted proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, which were rejected. And we did the same at the circuit court. If you look at the appellate briefs in this case, Your Honor, we believe that there's a very terse paragraph from the department just saying simply that they don't see that as an issue. Now, they may couch that in terms of saying that's not an issue because we went on the first issue. But this is the time and the place for addressing those issues. And we believe that based upon the record, and the decision that was made by the hearing examiner, which we believe is perfectly consistent with the record, that the court can and should decide that issue. Not only is the actual construction by the department inconsistent when you take an analysis and compare it to the architectural services provision, the word professional, there's nothing magical about it. And actually, if you look throughout the SIC manual, the word appears in other places. professional dance schools, professional, semi-professional athletic teams. In none of those contexts does the word professional per se require some sort of state certification or licensing. And actually, the architectural provision is a great example because it lists house designers, and in South Dakota, there is no requirement that house designers be licensed or certified by the state of South Dakota. The department's construction also really defies common sense because logically they take it out of context, and there are two elements, the 871 and the projects entirely outside of South Dakota. And they're saying that for an engineer to qualify for this exemption, they not only have to have a South Dakota certification or license, they also have to be rendering all their services for projects outside the state. There's no congruence between the two because logically it should not matter where the services are being rendered. And if anything, the focus would be on the other states rather than a person holding South Dakota licensure or certification.
So are you... Is your understanding in their ruling that if they were licensed by somebody else, the state of Nebraska or Iowa or North Dakota or Hawaii, that they would not fall under this exemption either? Is that how they've applied it?
No, Your Honor. We don't think that licensure or certification reads into it at all. And
but is that how they're applying it?
And we don't even have any evidence or indication that they're applying it in that way either. And actually, the arguments and positions being taken by the party at this point are remarkably different from how they were presented before the hearing examiner. And if you look at the administrative materials and the appendix, the audit and the conclusion from the department seems to be primarily driven by a telephone call that was made by the auditor to an unknown person, except their first name was known to be Wendy. And they asked Wendy from the Department of Labor, what's a professional engineer? The auditor, when questioned before the hearing examiner, said she didn't know who Wendy was, didn't know if Wendy was qualified to give an opinion or render a decision on this. Nonetheless, took Wendy at her word, used that as sort of a justification or basis for denying the exemption in this case. Now, the procedure that the Department of Revenue should have followed, it seems to be very clearly set forth in this court's other decisions. And the department has made the argument that when a statute defines a word or phrase, that same definition should be applied throughout the code. But what we have here is a focus on the term or phrase professional. But they're trying to use a statutory definition to define a term in the SIC manual. Now, the legislature does not have the authority, as far as I'm aware, to interpret provisions in the SIC manual. They did not draft the SIC manual. And actually, at the time that the engineering licensing certification statutes were enacted, the SIC manual had already been created. Alternatively, we believe that Mr. Mauch would be at least entitled to a partial exemption under SDCL 1045-12.3. And again, we would refer the court to the department's July 24, 2003 letter, where the auditor talks about exactly what it was that Mr. Mauch was doing. And the letter clearly expresses the department's understanding that he was rendering services in connection with tangible personal property. The Quality Railcar case, the changes that were made afterwards to that, to the operative statutory language by the legislature, left intact the principle that when it's tangible personal property that never enters the state of South Dakota, that it's still exempt under 12.3. So at a bare minimum, we believe that Mr. Mauch is entitled to the partial exemption under 12.3. Finally,
before you move on, you know, the statute says, as I recall, that it has to, the services have to occur entirely outside the state. That doesn't suggest partial. It doesn't suggest partial abatements to me.
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, I should clarify. When I talk about a partial exemption, it's simply by virtue of the fact that the 12.3, that was no longer good law about halfway through this audit period. So there is an issue of retroactivity. 12.3 was taken off the books, so that if an exemption did apply here, we're certainly not trying to be greedy, and we want to make that clear to the court. Finally, one of the most compelling reasons, we believe, for the invalidation of this assessment is the process that was used by the Department of Revenue. And a certificate of assessment can be invalidated if it's contrary to the facts, if it's contrary to the law, or arbitrary and capricious. And certainly there's some overlap. But we believe that arbitrary and capricious decision-making in that standard, it really encompasses more, because it goes to the process that's used by the governmental agency. And we believe that this court has a responsibility to exercise oversight, because it ultimately impacts public confidence in our governmental officials. And here, we would respectfully submit that the department's process and procedures for assessing tax in this case was haphazard at best. The auditor admitted that she lacked an understanding of the nature of the services that were provided. And clearly, that understanding is essential to any assessment. Your Honor, for all of those reasons, we would respectfully request that the certificate of assessment for sales and use tax in the amount of $70,641.32 be reversed and invalidated. We would challenge, though, the department to provide some explanation on a few issues. And the first really goes, and we believe that these are issues that have really never been addressed by the department throughout this, throughout the appellate process or before this court. And the first goes to the department's interpretation of 12.2 as requiring a South Dakota professional license, when the exemption itself only concerns with projects outside of the state, that there's no congruence whatsoever between those two.
Well, what they're really saying then, though, is that engineering services can only be services supplied by a licensed engineer. Is that, that's how they've interpreted, correct?
Well, actually, Your Honor, if you look through the record in this case and read their brief, the emphasis has always been on having a South Dakota license or certification. That's how they've interpreted it, and that's how we've applied it.
So you couldn't have any engineering services. I guess my question, I'm not being very clear. The engineering, it says that what's exempt is engineering services. So you couldn't have any services provided by engineer. I mean, the engineer has to be licensed. That's what they're saying by South Dakota.
They're saying it's required. Our position is it's not required under the clear language of the statute. And if you look at the SIC, all there is the word professional. Now, in construing terms and phrases within the SIC manual, the court has traditionally and correctly looked towards the common ordinary understanding as provided through a dictionary definition, and not turned the analysis back around and looked to unrelated statutory language. You know, the second issue that we would challenge the department to address relates to this court's decision in the Graceland College case. Now, that also involved a classification or categorization of services that were provided by the party that was challenging a tax assessment. And the court also looked at there and said, well, now, they're arguing that they fall under this SIC provision. The department says they really fall under this one. But if you look at the one the department says they fall under, that looks all right. That makes sense. Well, here, the classification that was assigned by the department to Mr. Mauch makes no sense. They've classified him as being either a systems engineering consultant or industrial development planner. And honestly, we've looked high and low and can't find a lot of information indicating what those things or professions really entail. So if that's the case, We would ask the department to provide some sort of explanation as to why, factually, those classifications are appropriate. We don't feel that it can do that. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. McGee, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jack McGee. I represent the Department of Revenue and Regulation in this matter. Unless the court has some questions regarding facts, I'm going to move directly into my argument. This case involves...
Do you agree that the only issue is the engineering part and not whether or not the project is entirely out of state?
Justice Meyer-Henry, the question of whether or not this... there is a project located entirely outside the state is not before the court. The Secretary of Revenue did not address that issue. He ruled that Mr. Mauck was not an engineer entitled to the exemption in 12.2.
Well, but let me follow up on that. I mean, you've briefed the case and brought it here. It doesn't appear to me, based on what I've looked at, there's any question that this project was entirely outside the state. Is that correct?
Justice Center, as the department noted in its brief, the secretary did not rule on that issue, so we did not make an argument as to where the project was located. We talked about where the services of Mr. Malk were used, but not where the project was located. We did not analyze that second part of 12.2. But if you'd like me to go into that...
Let me ask you it this way then. Where the services were used, that's only relevant under 12.3. That's not even relevant under 12.2, is it?
That's correct, Justice Sitter. This case involves legal questions about the interpretation of several tax exemption statutes. The court applies the de novo standard of review to these types of legal questions. Additionally, the court must keep in mind that tax exemption statutes are to be strictly construed in favor of the department. Applying the rule of strict construction in favor of the department, the circuit court held that Mr. Malk was not entitled to the exemption in 1045.12.2. The department submits that the circuit court was correct in that holding. As the court is well aware, pursuant to 1045.4, all services performed in South Dakota are in the big boat of taxation. They're all taxable unless they're specifically exempt. There's no question that Mr. Malk performs services in South Dakota. He works out of his home in Burbank. He works at the BPI headquarters in Dakota Dunes. He designs here. He brainstorms with the president of BPI. He's performing services in South Dakota. Accordingly, unless he can prove entitlement to an exemption, he is subject to the sales tax imposed by 1045.4. One of the exemptions we're looking at today is 1045.12.2, and that provides an exemption for certain engineering services, not all engineering services, just certain engineering services. The statute requires that to be eligible for the exemption, the taxpayer must meet a two-part test. First, the taxpayer must fall within the classification 871 of the SIC manual. Second, the taxpayer must show that the service that he is rendering is rendered for a project located entirely outside the state of South Dakota. Assuming that the taxpayer can satisfy both requirements, the exemption will apply even though the service may be partially used inside the state of South Dakota. Mr. Malk fails the first part of this test. Industry group number 8711, which is a subpart of major group 871, classifies engineers. It reads in pertinent part, establishments primarily engaged in providing professional engineering services. This language restricts the exemption in 12.2 to only professional engineers, not to just any engineer, professional engineers. Neither the tax code nor the SIC manual define what a professional engineer is. Pursuant to SDCL 2-14-4, and just as this court did in the Graceland College decision, the department looked to statutes regulating the occupation of engineers for guidance in what was meant by professional engineer. SDCL 30, Chapter 36-18A is the chapter that regulates the occupation of engineers, architects, and surveyors. 36-18A-124 defines a professional engineer as a person licensed in good standing and legally authorized to practice engineering in this state. That's the definition provided for the occupation of professional engineering. It's undisputed that Mr. Malk is not licensed pursuant to Chapter 36-18A. He doesn't have the license.
Let me interrupt you there. And when you go back to 12.2, following your argument, why doesn't the legislature address or make reference to those other statutes, if that's what they intended?
Justice Meyer Henry, the legislature has a long history of using the Standard Industrial Classification Manual when it is enacting exemptions. And that's what it did here. It used Major Group 871 for this particular exemption.
But what your argument is that we go to the code, the industrial code, but then we go back to the statute for the definition of professional.
That's what I'm...
So I guess my question is, why didn't they put that in the statute to begin with? Because if you delegate it or you go down and look at the code, it still doesn't answer the question, or the industrial code. It doesn't answer the question, so you still have to come back to the... Then you're coming to another chapter in the state code, in the laws, and why didn't they put that in here?
Why the legislature didn't refer to 36-18A in 12.2 is obvious. 36-18A was enacted in 1999. We have to remember that in the session law that enacted 36-18A, it also repealed 36-18, which is the predecessor to 36-18A. 36-18 was the chapter that regulated the occupations of engineering, architects, and surveyors before 18A, and had done so since at least 1925, Your Honor. Why the legislature didn't make reference to those chapters, to that chapter, I don't know. But I do know that pursuant to this court's prior decisions and pursuant to 214.4, the department's use of 36-18A is entirely appropriate. 214.4 reads that whenever the meaning of a word or phrase is defined in any statute, wherever that same definition is applied to that same term or phrase, wherever it's used in the code, unless a contrary intention plainly appears. A contrary intention does not plainly appear here. Rather, there is a clear intention to use 36-18A, the 36-18A definition. 1045.12.2 applies to engineers, architects, and surveyors. 36-18A and its predecessor, 36-18, applied to engineers, architects, and surveyors. The three match. Now, as the circuit court noted, the legislature is presumed to be knowledgeable about prior enactments related to a similar subject. Here we have an exemption related to engineers, architects, and surveyors. When that statute was enacted, presumably the legislature knew that it also regulated those occupations in a different chapter, and that the definitions in the regulatory chapter would apply to the exemption.
The exemption, though, the statutory exemption, does not have the word professional in it.
No, it does not, Justice Center, but this court has consistently read the provisions of the SIC manual. When it's looking at an exemption statute, the provisions of the SIC manual that are referred to in the exemption, they've read those words into the statute, just as though they're part of the statute. It's just a matter of convenience that the legislature simply refers to it and doesn't incorporate the exact language into the statute. But the words of Major Group 871, that entire section, are just as much a part of 12.2 as the plain words engineers, architects, and surveyors. You have to read them together. Now, Mr. Malk would have this court give a broad definition to the phrase professional engineer. And he gets that from a dictionary definition of professional and a dictionary definition of engineer. And you put those two together, you get a broad definition, and sure, Mr. Malk fits within that broad definition. But again, we're not, as this court has said on prior occasions when interpreting exemptions, we don't give broad meaning to exemptions. We strictly construe the exemption in favor of the department. We give exacting and narrow interpretations to the exemption. The department submits that the definition found in 3618A1, subparagraph 24, is the appropriate definition to give to professional engineer because it is narrow, it is exact, and it defines the occupation that we're talking about. Just like this court in the Graceland College decision did, it looked to how this court and how the legislature had treated the phrase continuing education when talking about occupations. This court looked outside the tax code, the other areas of the code, to define continuing education. This case is no different than that.
Mr. McGee, if your argument is correct, and Mr. Malk was providing these services, not being licensed, then I suspect that he's subject to prosecution or whatever for providing these services without a license under 3618A.
Of course, that issue is not before this court.
But that's the argument you're making, essentially, that his services are regulated by that chapter.
What the department is saying, Justice Center, is that Mr. Malk is not licensed pursuant to 36-18A. Is he providing the type of services that require licensure? I don't know. But I know the exemption that he's talking about in 12.2 requires him, if he's an engineer, to be licensed. Are his services included within 36-18A? Maybe. And if they are, and if he is required to be licensed, then there are other provisions in 3618A that do apply to him. But all the department is saying here is he does not have the license, the requisite license, to take advantage of the exemption in 12.2.
Was this the first time, to your knowledge, that the department had interpreted that exemption the same way, or in this way? Because when I'm reading the hearing examiner's opinion, she made some reference to that if the department really believed that a professional license is required, it may have previously issued a declaratory ruling or written that interpretation in one of their revenue publications.
That, yes, Justice Meyer-Henry, that is
so
what the hearing examiner...
So is this the first time that the revenue department has interpreted that statute in this way?
I don't know if it's the first time or not, Justice Meyer-Henry. I do know that there is no requirement that the department adopt rules or issue declaratory rulings on every interpretation it has of the statutes which it administers. So there has not been a regulation or a declaratory ruling issued on this precise issue.
But then they turned around, which is another issue that's been raised. They turn around and impose a penalty.
Justice Meyer-Henry, the penalty was for not being licensed. Mr. Malk had operated here since at least 1995.
She's saying here is that the department, he would have had no way of knowing that was the department's interpretation.
With all
they had not issued any kind of a previous declaratory ruling or written interpretation in one of their revenue publications. And then they turn around and hit him with a penalty.
Justice Meyer Henry, Mr. Malk came to South Dakota. He moved to South Dakota because of its favorable tax climate. He moved here because we do not have a state income tax. When he moved here in 94 or 95, he did not contact, or the record does not indicate that he contacted the department to determine whether his services were subject to any of our taxes. The record shows that he relied on the CPA located at BPI to advise him that his services were not subject to tax. But Mr. Mount did, the record doesn't show that Mr. Mount contacted the department. And I think it's reasonable to assume that if a person is moving into the state because of its tax climate, not only are they going to look at the income tax side of things, but also all the other business taxes that go along with performing a business in a state. And the record doesn't show that Mr. Malk ever contacted us. Now, to impose a penalty, I think that's entirely reasonable. He wasn't licensed. He didn't talk to us. Would we have discussed his services, the taxability of his services in 95, had he talked to us? Certainly. But he didn't.
To follow up on Justice Meyerhenry's question, the department does, however, have a publication, as I understand, that interprets 12.2 and talks about the fact that it's the location of the project rather than where the services are provided that that controls the first part of the test. Is that right?
The briefing. Are you referring to the tax facts?
The briefing indicated there's a publication that discusses
there is, it. There is a tax facts that talks about, that explains how services are taxed when they are performed by a South Dakota business for an out-of-state customer. I believe the example in the tax facts is an accountant performing services for a Pizza Hut in Iowa. Those services are used entirely outside the state of South Dakota. They're exempt pursuant to 12.3. They're not exempt pursuant to 12.2. I want to get in briefly into Mr. Malk's arguments that this court's decisions in Wharf Resources and Cooperative Agronomy control whether or not this court can go outside the confines of the tax code for a definition of professional engineering services. In both the Wharf Resources case and the Co-op Agronomy case, this court examined the legislative intent of the statute and rejected the party's attempts to go outside the respective chapters for a definition. Although the court did not expressly analyze 214.4 in these two decisions, both decisions are entirely consistent with that statute. In both those cases, this court found that the legislative intent, that there was no legislative intent to use the proposed definitions. In the present case, and as previously stated, there's every reason to believe that the legislature knew about the definition of professional engineer when it enacted 1245.12.2 and intended that the definitions used to regulate engineers would apply. Now, there at least facially does appear to be some inconsistency with the Wharf Resources decision, the Co-op Agronomy decision, and then this court's analysis and the Graceland College decision. But all three cases look to legislative intent. And I submit that that is what this court is being requested to do today, to look at the legislative intent, to determine whether the legislature intended the definition of professional engineer in 3618A to apply to the exemption in 12.2. I submit that the legislature did.
The referee, going back to the referee's decision, she makes some reference to the SIC or the NAICS code not requiring degrees in every case.
Yes, Justice Meyer Henry. And as this court explained, I believe, in the Graceland College decision, it is inappropriate to view, to use the NAICS manual to interpret a tax exemption which refers to the SIC manual. So the hearing examiner's reference to the NAICS manual is entirely inappropriate. She should have restricted her analysis simply to the SIC manual and the statutes, and not gone to the NAICS manual. I have 2 seconds left, 1045.12.3. I think it's clear that services provided by Mr. Malk were not used entirely outside the state, and therefore that exemption is inapplicable and unavailable to him.
Thank you, Mr. McGee.
Thank you.
Council, we have 10 minutes.
May it please the court, briefly touch on a few points raised by the department. The department takes the position that the issue of where projects are located or the location of the projects in question, that that's not an issue because the department decided not to rule on it. We don't believe that the department can unilaterally define what issues this court does and does not review. It was our burden of proof. We made our record. We consistently pressed that issue through every stage of this lawsuit. The department made a strategic decision not to address it in its briefs before this court. It makes that decision at its peril. We also believe that during oral argument today, the department has conceded that Mr. Malk's services fit within our broad definition that we provide. So really, the only issue before the court is, does the court accept our definition, the dictionary definition, or accept their approach, the department's approach, for how to define this term professional? Because that's what they say it hinges on, is professional. And we agree that this court should look to the Graceland College decision. The court may recall that in the Graceland College case, there were two bases for the claimed exemption. One, I believe, was relating to education services. That made the express reference to the SIC code. The other was discussing continuing education or continuing education programs. That one did not contain a reference to the SIC code. So you have one with a reference, one without. The one that had the reference, the court looked to the SIC provision, looked to the language, then looked to the dictionary to give it its plain, ordinary meaning. Now, in contrast, where there was no reference to the SIC code, the court said, well, we'll look to other statutory language. That's the approach that this court took in Graceland College, and that's the approach that we believe is appropriate here today. The department has conceded that adopting our definition, which it calls broad, but we call legally appropriate, that Mr. Malk's services qualifies engineering services. Having offered no argument regarding the issue of where the projects are located, we believe that Mr. Malk most certainly should prevail on that issue. As far as project location itself, in the appendix to our brief, at page 11, there's a list of question and answer, and this may be what the court was referring to previously. The question presented to the department, and this was in a newsletter that the department publishes, the question is, I am an architect who does work on projects for businesses located throughout the country. In collecting and remitting sales tax, is it based on the business location or the project location? The answer was, people engaged in architectural, engineering, and surveying services charge South Dakota sales tax on their services according to where the project is located. If a project is located out of state, South Dakota sales tax is not charged. If the project is located in South Dakota, your services are subject to South Dakota tax, even if performed outside South Dakota. Now, first, that last sentence didn't seem to make sense. But if you think about it, this is an architect saying that I do projects for companies located throughout the United States. Now, you may have a situation where you have a project being done for some company in New York that just happens to be building an office building in Mitchell. Well, because the project is in Mitchell, the fact that you're sending the drawings or going to New York and working with those people out of state, that doesn't make you exempt from tax. You have to pay based upon where the project is located. And the record here is crystal clear that all of the projects were located outside of South Dakota. Everything that Mr. Mauch does relates to meat processing machinery, highly specialized, technically complex meat processing machinery. The type of stuff that if I were, you go into detail about those sort of things and it may put some people to sleep, but there's no dispute in the record that this is exactly the kind of work he did. All of the meat processing machinery is located outside of South Dakota at BPI's different processing facilities. Now, one of the flaws in the department's logic about looking to these statutory definitions is that it overlooks that under SIC 871, not all of the examples provided under 871, under 8711 or 8712, are professions, vocations, that require some sort of state licensure certification. For example, under 8711, machine tool designers are listed. And tellingly, under 8712, they list house designers, which, according to South Dakota statutes, do not have to hold state-issued architectural certification or licensing. The department, in its brief on appeal, made references to different criminal statutes. And frankly, we were taken aback by these arguments. It was a lot like the two kids, in the schoolyard having a heated argument. And in this case, the department felt like it couldn't win, so it had to threaten that it was going to have its dad come and beat us up. That's kind of what it felt like. And these were never really arguments that were advanced at the circuit court level or before the hearing examiner, which is most important. As far as the references to the NAICS, the hearing examiner did make references to the NAICS, that standing alone does not taint what is otherwise a very well-reasoned, factually correct decision. The Department of Revenue's arguments and the assessment itself, it's like a house built on sand. It doesn't have a factual or legal foundation. And like any house built on sand, eventually it's bound to crumble and fall apart. For all the reasons stated here today and all those set forth within our briefs to the court, we respectfully request that the certificate of assessment issued to Gary Mauch be reversed and vacated in its entirety. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.